I've called this morning Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. And it's quite apt after the week we've had. And it's a little bit close today. Close is a word that Telford used this morning. I thought that was quite good. In Mark 7, we learn a bit more about the purity laws of the Jewish people and how they affected the way that they prepared, served, and ate food. It was a complex system that people learnt. They had to navigate it. It placed restrictions on what they could do, and it defined them culturally as a people set apart. It's very easy to criticise something we don't understand, particularly 2,000 years on. But we are poorer in our understanding of our own faith if we just dismiss something that is unusual to us. Paula Darcy is a Canadian spiritual teacher, and she says, God comes to us disguised as our lives. God comes to us disguised as our lives. Well, there are many ways of living life, so let's just see if we can find God disguised in this way too. The Pharisees followed two Torah. There was the written Torah, there was the oral Torah. Sadducees were different. They were the letter of the law, the written law. Okay, so we're talking about the Pharisees today. So it wasn't just the laws that were inherited from Moses, it wasn't just those written laws. According to the oral laws, Pharisees were required to achieve a higher level of purity than ordinary Jews. Thank goodness that's not the case in the Uniting Church. There were rituals to washing that took a long time. But if they were not ritually clean, they could not take part in the religious rituals. Now, a quick aside, just to put this into a bit of context, because I was thinking, well, okay, so that might sound strange, but let's give it an example from our own history, our own context. It used to be the role of the duty elder, did it not, to stand at the door of the vestry and defend the minister before the service from anybody entering the vestry. Because the minister, usually a he, had to have time to prepare to lead worship. Okay, so that's a ritual in itself. We don't do that now. I have different rituals that I do before I lead a service. And some of them could be viewed through the lens of ritual cleansing. I don't physically wash my hands continually in a certain way, but I do go through some little rituals of my own to kind of like a self-emptying, so that I'm prepared to lead worship. I also have little rituals before and after pastoral conversations. I don't know if some of you elders and pastoral care visitors do that as well. So little rituals around pastoral conversations. So keep that at the back of your mind and don't dismiss what you're hearing this morning. Just try and find examples from today. Now, the Pharisees also interpreted the oral laws so they could speak into the problems and issues that they were facing at the time, rather than just focusing entirely on the written laws that had come from Moses. So they were bringing them up to date for their own time. And that's not unlike the work that we do, that we're doing this morning. We theologically reflect, we acknowledge our current context, and then we apply the texts to our situations today. So it's not dissimilar. The belief was purity symbolised holiness, and impurity separated us from God. I don't know about you, maybe this was an English thing, but my grandma, cleanliness is next to godliness. Yep, Australia, it was here too? Okay. I mean, I was a bit of a dirt urchin, but over and over again. On one level, the purity laws were to remind the people of their moral obligations and to regulate behaviour, particularly around the worship of idols and other gods. So food was sacrificed to pagan gods and the people were expected to eat it. So these food laws prohibited the Jewish people from taking part in worshipping gods other than Yahweh. On another level, the purity laws were defining roles and people into different groups. So the religious leaders and the ordinary people. Different rules for different roles, different requirements for levels of purity. The intention behind them was to regulate behaviour, and so there were ways to become clean again. So if you did come into contact with something considered unclean, there were things that you could do to become clean again. You didn't remain impure. You could become pure and therefore rejoin the community. Now we see that when Jesus sends the man that he's healed of leprosy off to the priest, and he is then declared clean and able to rejoin the community. There is, however, an underlying issue here around exclusion. So who, why, for how long was somebody considered unclean? Food is important in the midst of the purity laws as it's viewed as a blessing from God. Think about God feeding the Hebrew people in the desert with the manna and the birds. The belief was that God blessed the people with food and punished the people with famine. Think back to the story of Joseph's family coming to Egypt because of the famine and rejoining Joseph there in safety. The regulation of food into pure and impure, into clean and unclean, is there to alert the Jewish people to this blessing. It reminds them of the sacred stories when God fed them wherever they were and came to their aid. So food is part of that story. It's a physical reminder. Easy to dismiss, isn't it? It's easy to say, well, that was then and this is now. But what do we do with food? Christians do exactly the same thing with communion. We tell the story of the last meal with the physical bread and the physical juice. Some Christians have rituals and prayers to remind them of the different meals in the Bible where Jesus ate with people considered unclean. And they use these prayers at different meals. Sometimes it's a simple grace, but the intent behind it is to remember the story, to remember the narrative of their faith. So they're using the physical food as part of the story. Salvation Army is an interesting one because they don't celebrate communion, but they say that every meal is a form of communion. Every meal. Initially, the purity laws are in place to create regulations and boundaries. These boundaries are great when they're protecting vulnerable people and they're in place to protect the oppressed. Think about when the Hebrew people were in the desert. They just escaped from Egypt. They'd escaped from the pagan deities and they're trying to rediscover who they are. They'd come out of this land and they're trying to rediscover, well, what does it mean to be God's people? So the boundaries and the regulations that were formed around them gave them something to identify with. Boundaries can also be used to establish who is in and who is out. They can be used to protect those in power from those who have no power. You think about the building of walls. Who's being protected there? Think about national borders. Think about how our global leaders exploit people's irrational fears and then they create distrust about people who are different to us. This morning's reading is an issue where the disciples have been criticised by the Pharisees for not following the rituals around purity, around food. And Jesus hits back by telling them that they've forgotten what the laws are for. They were never intended to exclude people. They were intended to include them by creating community. Jesus says it's not what you put into your body that defiles you, it's what comes out. Expressed slightly different way, it's not what you put into your mouth that defiles you, it's what comes out of your mouth. Don't sweat about what you eat. Worry about the words that you're using to others. Worry about what you're saying. Don't sweat the small stuff, or you'll lose sight of the big stuff that really matters. If we look at this another way and understand the body as the nation of Israel, Jesus is suggesting that people should be more worried about the corruption from within the nation than what's going on outside. Perhaps there's a message for us too. Don't worry about what everyone else is doing. Let's get our own house in order and let's realign with God's ways of love and grace. And that was said as an occupied country. There's actually nothing new in that, because that's exactly what the First Testament prophets were saying constantly. Don't sweat the small stuff like washing your hands. Focus on the big picture of how you can share God's love with others, no matter how dirty your hands are. Sounds simple, sounds ridiculous, but let's just see how hard that is to do. One criticism I've heard for years in the church is that people who are new to church, they feel put off by ritual, by church ritual. The argument is that all ritual, therefore, in church should be removed in order for people to feel included and welcomed. I'd like to suggest to you that when a ritual is conducted well, it's actually a way to include people. So let's look at communion, because that's an easy one. When we lead communion here, we always use the words, this is God's table and all are welcome. Yeah? And then whoever's leading will explain how the communion is going to be served. That's a fraught one, actually, isn't it? When you go somewhere new, you're not sure how communion is going to get to you. Or if you've got to come up to the front. In this way, anyone who feels moved to take communion is invited and is included, because we're letting them know what's going to happen. Communion is an opportunity for those around the new people to be a friendly face and explain what's going on, rather than completely focusing on themselves at that particular moment. So always look around you. Who am I sitting with? Who's unsure? So I'd suggest that in understanding and being included in ritual, people don't feel excluded. So I would suggest that we don't need to remove all of our ritual. We just need to be self-aware, understand it, and explain it. We need to understand why we're doing it. What I would say is, as an aside, a church that states it has no ritual, that in itself is actually a ritual. So I'm just going to leave that one with you. A second way of looking at this, let's think about the body in this reading, the body that's being defiled. Let's think of that as our wider community. And let's apply Jesus' words to our community. It's not what enters the body that defiles you, but what comes out. Who at the moment is marginalised in our community? Who's marginalised?
Refugees.
Refugees, yep.
Chinese.
I'd suggest anyone who appears physically to come from Asia is hugely marginalised at the moment because obviously they carry the virus, don't they? Obviously. Now, it sounds utterly ridiculous until you hear news reports of people of Asian appearance being refused service in shops, being berated on public transport, being refused rides in Uber and taxis. That's all purely based on physical appearance. But that's not new. When I was little and growing up, there were boarding houses around my grandma's place that refused to take lodgers who were not white or who were Irish. The conversation was, this is a respectable area and we take respectable people. Respectable people are obviously not going to be non-white and they're not going to be Irish. Now, Irish usually meant Catholic. That's what they were saying. It was that whole Catholic Protestant thing going on. Jesus berates his disciples. He's pretty harsh in this reading and he accuses them of not understanding. But we don't understand either. Jesus says, it is from within, from the human heart, that evil intentions come. All these evil things come from within and they defile a person. They come from within. That's why we have Ash Wednesday services, for example, to prepare for Lent by acknowledging that what's inside our hearts is not always pretty. The purity laws were intended to create a community, to define and regulate behaviour so that people understood the blessings that they enjoyed all came from God. That was the intention. The message from the prophets was to stay aligned with God's way of truth and justice. Jesus explains to us what this actually looks like through his teaching, through the miracles and through the parables. And from Roddy Hamilton's poem this morning, it looks like God calling ordinary people like us to follow. It looks like casting the stone only if you haven't sinned yourself. It looks like healing those who are considered unclean and therefore excluded. And it looks like saying no to the oppressors and welcoming the oppressed. Washing your hands before you eat is common sense hygiene. Okay? But having clean hands doesn't mean you live with God's integrity and God's truth. You may look clean on the surface, but it means nothing if your words are not words of truth and justice, and if your actions are not aligned to what you say. So the small stuff, don't sweat the small stuff. Leave that to others. Keep your focus firmly on God, because God is the only true source of life. Don't sweat the small stuff. But in the words of Amos, let justice roll on like a river and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream.